Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Since the mid-1970s, February has been recognized federally as Black History Month. The celebration started as Negro History Week back in 1926 and expanded in 1976 to a full month under President Gerald Ford. This year, the month's theme is Black Resistance. Educators take time to focus on the theme and highlight the lives of icons such as Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King Jr., and Rosa Parks. But critics say Black history is American history, history that reaches all the way back to the nation's founding, and it should be integrated throughout the school year, not relegated to a single month. Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon recently sat down with Delaware State University Professor Donna Patterson, chair of DSU's Department of History, Political Science, and Philosophy, and Africana Studies Program Director, to learn more about how Black history is so entwined in the larger arc of our country that it cannot be separated.
So, Dr. Patterson, to start, how would you assess the general knowledge of African-American history among your students?
The general knowledge of African-American history among my students varies. It varies considerably. Some students come in, they have great knowledge. Some of them have learned things in K through 12. Some of them have learned things in the community, sometimes from family, or even done some research on their own. And in some schools in the state of Delaware, for instance, Cesar Rodney offers a African-American history course. And so some students take that. And I found, for instance, students who've taken that before they come to class, they have a really strong basis. Students in some other states have taken similar classes or doing some things at home. And so they have bases that could also vary depending on what they're reading and how far they go in terms of their exploration. And so it really varies. And then I also have students who come in who know absolutely nothing or very little about African-American history, maybe the little bits and pieces that they've been taught growing up in K through 12. I think that's definitely expanded even, you know, in the last few decades and certainly since I was in school and generations before me, but it's still in some cases is very limited.
And I want to touch on that K through 12 aspect of things, but you know, we're talking today, it's Black History Month. And one thing I've just always been very interested in is this, essentially this push and pull, right? Between, you know, Black history being American history, and yet, you know, it's one month that is set aside to, you know, put a spotlight on it, but there is still that reality where it is a 12-month thing. I've read many times that if there hadn't been centuries of deliberate suppression of African-American history, there wouldn't be this resulting ignorance, essentially, that leaves many Americans not seeing a problem. What do we know about how that kind of deliberate suppression worked?
So Black History Month actually started as Black History Week. By Carter G. Woodson, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, African-American historian and scholar, got his PhD actually from Harvard University. And so he started Negro History Week in the early 20th century. So it started as a week and it expanded out into a month later. And so that is how we got Black History Month. He started Negro History Week in February, because some people say, oh, it's the shortest month in the year, but he actually started the week in February. And so as it expanded out, it became February as a month. And so that is those are the foundations there. And I think definitely there are some strengths to having a Black History Month, because in a lot of cases, the history that students and other people, students, their parents, people in the community, that may be the only time that they're really thinking about any type of Black history. And so they will often get some sort of either instruction, programming, enrichment. And so often people will get things that they may not have gotten if they're not seeking those things, or maybe if they're not studying these areas. But certainly, just like all history, it is intricate and it's multifaceted and it weaves through the American society. So in terms of suppression, I mean, I think there are cases where you can argue that there is suppression of Black history. There are also cases where people just are ignorant of Black history. So we may not say that they're willingly suppressing, they just don't know. So how do you teach something or share about something that you may not know? But I think when you look at the history of the Black American experience in the US, a lot of the early history definitely was tied to racial suppression and also this in some ways othering people who were Black. When I teach African-American history, I also taught world history. I have training in African history and Latin American Caribbean is my primary training. But if you look in those areas and you look at Europe and you look at global history, particularly that I've taught ancient history, for instance, slavery always existed. Slavery always existed globally, going back to antiquity. You can look at early societies in different parts of the world, in the Middle East, in Asia, in Latin America, different places in Africa, slavery existed. It exists well before we get to the transatlantic slave trade, which brings slaves to the Americas. But when you look at slavery historically in a lot of societies, it looks different. There are cases where people can transcend slavery, maybe working a certain period of time, or maybe reproducing with someone who is free, or buying themselves out of slavery, or those sorts of things. Or maybe if they convert to a certain religion, and then they can be free. But also another big feature that we see in a lot of slavery and a lot of kind of old world ideas about slavery is that slavery is not tied to race. And we can think about, for instance, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire at its height stretches from roughly England to like the edge of India, goes around the Mediterranean, takes in parts of North Africa, Tunisia, Egypt, and these sorts of things. So it's really huge at its height. And as Rome expands, they enslave people that they conquer. And so they have slaves who are brown and Black and white and, you know, who present day, you know, you might say are from the Middle East, or you may say are from Europe, or you may say are from Africa, for instance. But it is not tied to race. And if you look at other societies, that is often the case. But what happens with the transatlantic slave trade, where slaves are taken from Africa and brought to the Americas, it becomes linked to race. And we see that in the United States to a great degree. And even who's enslaved in the United States, because early in the United States, you had people who were either unfree or semi-free or enslaved. And the early labor was often not people of African descent. So you had indentured servants who tended to be Europeans, and you had Native Americans who'd been enslaved. But as it goes on, this idea of tying it to people of African descent becomes more apparent in U.S. history, if you will. And so I think when you kind of look at those intersections, to answer your question, you see the foundations of some of that.
Well, to come back to something you touched on earlier about K-12 education, what do you make of that education then that K-12 students get on Black history? I know for me, at least, I remember growing up, obviously it was very thin, but I had a fourth grade class and we obviously didn't learn about anyone beyond Martin Luther King Jr. or Rosa Parks. But I remember they wanted us to act out the Underground Railroad and they set up a whole day to do that at our school. And I find that incredibly problematic on a number of levels. But what do you make of that education K-12 students get on Black history?
So you said you learned about MLK and Rosa Parks growing up.
Those two. Yeah.
And I think, you know, those are people that a lot of people learn about. I learned about Harriet Tubman. You didn't even get Harriet Tubman?
Maybe.
Harriet Tubman. But there are schools that really try to incorporate this curriculum throughout. It's going to vary by school district in some cases. It's going to vary by teacher, sometimes teacher interest, sometimes just teacher background. Because a lot of the teachers that are teaching history may not have taken any Black history. We're seeing two big trends, I think, and through the country right now in terms of looking at the 21st century and what this is looking like. So you're seeing some states like the state of Delaware. You know, House Bill 198 was recently passed in the state. With that bill, schools in the state of Delaware are supposed to incorporate some bit of Black history throughout the state curriculum. So certain school districts in the state are either had things or expanding upon those things, some not doing it as much. And hopefully in the future, some will do, you know, some more in ways that work for them, because I think, too, it's important. And I think, you know, this initiative for House Bill 198, it came from the students. It was something that students asked for. I think they were high school students because, you know, they were older because they understood these things and they wanted to hear more about their experience in their classes. And so that's where it came from. It wasn't this, you know, even though the state voted and, you know, it's ratified at the state level, it really started from the bottom up.
And historically, well, I will say, yeah, the education piece is so, so critical. Historically, you know, we're talking about these figures, these very visible figures, people like Martin Luther King Jr., you know, he's known for leading the civil rights movement. But in reality, you know, he was just one of many Right.
Absolutely. There were so many different people and so many other organizations. You know, he was a pastor and he was one of the leads of the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, you know, which was prominent and would partner with some of the other organizations. For instance, he often partnered with NAACP, and sometimes they were partner with CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, but also SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And so you had all of these different civil rights groups. Martin Luther King was one of many. He led SCLC with someone named Reverend Ralph Abernathy, who was actually senior to him. And then also they had other people who worked with him, including Bayard Rustin. You had Stokely Carmichael, Julian Bond. Women were very involved. Two very prominent women were Ella Baker and Fannie Lou Hamer.
I'm glad you touched on women here, because folks like Sojourner Truth, you know, Ain't I a Woman, women like Shirley Chisholm. Yeah. Outside of just women, though, how is it that these figures, these leaders, how are they lost throughout the translation of history?
Well, I don't know if they're ever lost. I don't know if these historical figures are ever lost. I think that there are always people who have that historical memory. There's also that historical documentation, because we haven't even talked really about literature and writing and research and scholarship, for instance. And so there were always people trying to document this history. And particularly, I think, if you're looking early on, it was harder, kind of the early centuries of U.S. history. You know, a lot of people of African descent could not read and write, or had limited ability to read and write because they were forbidden to read and write. But also, I think literacy broadly in the country was not that widespread. So there were a lot of white people who, and other people of other backgrounds, who could not read and write or do these things fluently. But in the 19th century, one of the things that we start to see, when you're looking at kind of the foundations of the creation of Black history as a discipline, that there are people that are starting to write these things and document these things in academic fashion. So this happens starting in the 19th century. You know, moving into the late 19th, early 20th century, there is more of that. W.E.B. Du Bois, he was someone who documented a lot of this history, but also other aspects of the African-American experience. Carter G. Woodson documented aspects of the African-American experience.
Well, an article I read recently, I can't remember who the author is, but it concluded with the hope that people will soon recognize essentially Black history as American history. When do you think that day will come?
I mean, I think kind of given some of the political climate that we see right now, it's hard to say when that would happen. And often I think when you listen to a lot of the opposition to it, a lot of the people opposing haven't really studied it. So do they really know what's contained? I mean, you could read this script or this table of contents and imagine what's there, but did you actually read it? Do you really know what's there? Because I know there's this debate coming out of Florida right now, for instance, with the AP African American Studies course. And now Governor DeSantis has said that they're going to ban it in the state. And now the College Board is saying they're going to go back and review and change some things. I think in some ways we're seeing a movement backwards about how people are viewing Black history.
Thanks to Delaware State University Professor Donna Patterson and our Kyle McKinnon for joining us on The Green this week. And we wrap up The Green next with Arts Playlist, where we tell you about a poetry workshop timed just right for those looking for the right words for that special someone on Valentine's Day. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.